So we were just talking, you were just talking about the importance of the government and industry leaders consistently reinvesting in the commitment to innovation.
Yeah. And innovation requires manufacturing. And unless the R&D people are co-located or close to the manufacturing people, when you're working at the leading edge, you have to keep, you know, the crosstalk and the dialogue and the experimentation has to be done in a way that can be done in a reasonable cycle time. And we have to be the first to move to market, etc. So I really feel very strongly that we need to co-locate manufacturing here. And, you know, we're not going to bring back what is lost, but we can stay at the leading edge. And so for biotechnology, nanotechnology, and the new areas of medical technology, etc., we need to manufacture here in this country.
So would you say, I've heard you say a couple of times in a couple of different ways that when you were in charge of various business units, when you were VP of Central R&D, when you worked with the engineering group, and now when you're talking about co-locating manufacturing
and
R&D, it sounds like that there should be this commitment to integrating all of those parts of a business, that it's not necessarily the same people, but they have to be able to talk to each other and they have to know each other.
Right.
Am I understanding that
correctly? Yes, absolutely. It really helps. It helps to reduce cycle time. It helps to gain market share. It helps in so many ways. It helps create more opportunities for people to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you grow, there aren't enough opportunities for the young ones to keep coming up through the system. You know, a lot of women feel that there aren't enough opportunities because the men are occupying all the key positions in corporate America, and everybody's working longer, staying longer, not creating the opportunity for the young ones to rise. So if we kept growing, more opportunities would get created, and the way to growth is through innovation. And or occasionally through acquisition, but largely through innovation. And unless you invest in it, you know, you're not going to get what you desire. So I was a very strong proponent of continuing to invest in R&D until they got tired of hearing it from me.
I'm sure they didn't get tired of it. Someone has to be a proponent of that.
Absolutely.
In thinking about the globalization of science and chemical industry, and also thinking about where women in industry are, I spoke with someone a couple of months ago who was from China originally and did her early education in China before moving to the United States. And she said that questions about women in science are so interesting to her because growing up in China, it didn't matter if you were a man or a woman. You either could do something or you couldn't do something. And it just didn't matter.
That's fantastic.
Said none of these things, she wasn't aware of any of these things until she got to the United States and started to see some of it.
Really?
But she had many experiences similar to yours where, you know, people were friendly. People were nice.
Yes.
People were not discriminatory. But I'm curious if you see the globalization of science and the globalization of industry as a way for more women around the world to become involved in science.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I do think that enables more women around the world to get more involved in science. I would say most societies that I have encountered outside the American system are very male chauvinistic. So I'm surprised by what you say, actually, of a young Chinese lady. Because, you know, I've been to Chinese customers and Japanese customers, Indian customers, and no, I would not feel that they are equally respectful of women. there's this chauvinistic, condescending attitude that in Europe as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think this country is still is far ahead of the others in many ways. Now, at the top of some governments, it is true that there are women in China and Germany and several countries. But, you know, the exception doesn't make the rule. Most of the middle strata of society still believes that the male gender is more capable. And we'll need larger numbers to demonstrate what women can do to change that paradigm, to change that thinking. It'll take a generation.
Mm-hmm.
The next generation is doing a whole lot better, the generation after mine.
Do you think that, I mean, we can look at the chemical industry in the United States, and of chemical companies, there are two CEOs that are women. Of course, one is here at DuPont and one is at Dow Corning.
Mm-hmm.
Do you foresee that changing in the next, you know, in the next generation, in the next generation of CEOs, that they'll...
I do.
It might be more evenly split.
I do think that. You know, I've been to a few meetings of the Fortune most powerful women. They gather a summit, mm-hmm. and 500 to 1,000 women attend that summit. And you see the most incredible talent. And the talent coming up is very, very impressive. And I don't see how they won't become CEOs. Absolutely, they will. The talent pool is enormous, and it is growing. So... how long it will take is the issue. You know, some industries, like the chemical industry, are very old.
Mm-hmm.
They resist change. It's taken a long time for the DuPont executives to have a few women among them. We have one woman who's a president out of the 15 presidents that we have. So it's going to take time. It's a slow process.
Do you, for the women who are in industry, and this can just be your impression of it, not your experience, because as you said, your experience was that you've been very lucky.
You haven't
felt discrimination.
Right.
Which is, of course, wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
We should all be able to say that.
Absolutely.
But do you have any sense that maybe women in industry are asked to prove themselves more before they move into some of these manager and higher positions?
I would say that's true of myself as well.
Okay.
That every new role I took, I had to prove myself. You aren't immediately accepted in your new role. You know, with male members, it's different. They don't get the scrutiny women get, is my view. Maybe it's a biased view, but that is my view,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, every assignment that a woman takes on, she really starts from scratch to establish her credentials, establish her credibility. Whereas a male coming in, his credibility is taken for granted. He's innocent until proven guilty. It's the other way around with women.
Yeah. What is there to do to fix that?
What does it take to fix that? It'll take a generation of repeated results. I think as long as women continue to build a track record of results, so in, you know, as I went along in my career, one can point to a track record of results,
mm-hmm.
and a series of successes, some failures, a series of successes. But every failure was an opportunity to learn and improve. So I think that during my day, there were many women who were beginning to establish a track record of results. But if people become too interested in moving from one assignment to another rapidly through a corporation, they don't have the time to see the impact of their decisions on some real results.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that I would, on all the people I mentored, always tell them to build a track record of results. Show what you can do before expecting people to just give you great assignments. They're not going to fall in your lap without a track record of capabilities and accomplishments. And then for you to communicate those accomplishments to people, your peers, your mentors, your seniors, because unless people know what you've done, they're not going to automatically know it.
Right.
So
you
communicate.
You can't expect everybody
to know what you've accomplished, because many Asians come with the notion that, you know, if I've done such a great job, everybody should know that. You know, my bosses should know it. But in the hurly-burly of everyday existence, when you have a lot of direct reports, it's difficult to keep track of everybody. So I think communication skills, interpersonal skills, and track record of results, those are good ingredients for success.
Now, was that something that you did in terms of going to your kind of superiors?
Yes.
And reminding them about the things that you were doing well along the way.
I would network. Yes. I would say that one of my strengths has been my networking capability, internally as well as externally. I have a lot of connections externally. I have connections internally with the superiors. I found ways to catch up with them at some meeting or the other and tell them what I was working on and what I had done. You just find ways without being overt about it to communicate results. And hopefully your management is promoting you.
Yeah.
And that would be ideal, but that doesn't always happen. I remember when I found myself out of a job in the electronics department when they reorganized. I took it upon myself to go meet with the other sector group vice presidents to tell them that I was available if there were any opportunity came up in their organizations, and that this is what I had accomplished in electronics. So I think it's important. And people here, at least in the DuPont company, are more than willing to see you and to listen to your story, as long as you don't make a pain of yourself.
Yeah.
I think there's opportunity. People are willing to listen.
Now, you mentioned a couple of times yesterday that as you were kind of moving up into some of these business units and things, that there was one person in particular that kept saying, you really should take this position because I'm not going to ask again. And if you do want to move forward.
That's correct.
Was that someone that you would have considered a mentor or someone that helped you along your way?
Yeah, I would. He was a mentor. He noticed me when I was in Central Research. You know, I had spoken at a research review or done a review for their all the sector VPs and so on. And he noticed that I had capability and potential, and so he took it upon himself to help me along the way. So while I was in electronics, he was certainly a mentor. Then I moved on and he retired. So oftentimes what happens in large corporations is when your mentor retires, then you got to start all over and establish your credibility. And that certainly happens. And I have felt it. I've definitely felt it. You know, if your mentor disappears, or the person who spoke up for you in your earlier career, they all started retiring, so I was left
without an advocate
up above, and you have to create new advocates.
Now, how you mentioned just very briefly a couple of minutes ago about telling people that you mentor to make sure that they
yes.
promote themselves
yeah.
and that they network appropriately.
Yeah.
How do people how do people claim
take the
you
initiative
as a mentor, or do you go out and find people?
No,
to mentor?
People have to. No, I didn't go out and advertise. I am an approachable person, and people who wanted to talk to me found ways to talk to me. You know, you can catch me anywhere in the cafeteria or even schedule an appointment or whatever. People who wanted to get some advice, they came and saw me. And I was always happy to talk to people. I think if people can learn from my experiences, and if I could share experiences that would help people, you know, I would go and give talks at the terrace on the mall,
mm-hmm.
so that people would listen to my story and see what they could learn from it. They would ask questions. Anything I could do to help them. You know, I would always tell them there isn't a recipe that works for everybody, and times change, and today's times are different from when I joined the company, and so different things are important at different points in time. You have to understand your environment and the culture you're in and figure out for yourself how best to wind your way through it. But I think the cultural fit with the environment and the ability to create networks are key in large corporations. And then, of course, it depends on how good you are, on how well you can speak about your work and whether people will notice. Because, you know, to be noticed among 60,000 people, it's not easy. It's not at all easy. So you have to make that extra effort. And keep and build relationships. That's so critical. In the end, it's people making things happen, right? So, in today's world where social networking, you know, there are different ways of keeping in touch with people. And so there are different ways of getting noticed. And for people who take the initiative and have a strong desire to move up in the system in management, they have to befriend a senior manager one way or the other, and then through that person meet other managers, and that's how you get known.
Mm-hmm.
Some women do that successfully, really successfully. It really is very dependent on the culture you come from, but you know, there are equally aggressive types on every side of the ocean. There are. It just depends on how you grow up and what forms your personality.
Well, and certainly the ability to network and the ability to have confidence to go and talk to people.
To talk to people.
People can do that aggressively,
right.
Or they can do it
right.
Not aggressively.
Exactly.
But it is true. Everyone is different in how they interact with people.
Mm-hmm. I was fortunate in that I started getting rewards, external awards, and external recognition early in my career. Got elected to the National Academy of Engineering,
mm-hmm.
and to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. And in fact, you know, the year I retired, this 2011, I got two fairly significant awards, and you know, so I get in these award addresses, I get to promote DuPont, so it's good for DuPont, it's good for me, and people can see that it's possible, you know, to rise and become a CTO. I think I was the first woman to be a CTO in the chemical industry.
Mm-hmm.
So now I feel that there's presidents, CTOs, CEOs. The doors are open for really good, talented, motivated people to walk through it. The door is open.
You said yesterday at one point that, you know, earlier in your career, when you were still very much a researcher.
Yes.
And you were kind of starting to move into research management a little bit, that you never imagined that you would be chief science and technology officer.
Oh, no, never.
Was there some point in your career as you did start to move on and move into these various management fields that you did start to think, maybe I could do that one day, or maybe I'll be the one to fill that slot one day?
I did think at one point that maybe I'll get that role, but then I didn't get it for many years, and so I thought, no, I passed the age when I will get that job. So I was surprised, actually, when I got the VP job here and the CTO job. It was a big surprise to me. I wasn't quite expecting it. I was enjoying the duet job.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it sounded like it.
I was really having a great time. And I wasn't expecting this at all. Because, you know, there are different personalities that are in charge who may like you or may prefer somebody else.
Right.
So I noticed that at one point in my career that I wasn't in with the senior leadership of technology, so I didn't think I would get this job. It was interesting. You know, as I mentioned, you know, when your mentors retire, it's kind of luck of the draw on who gets the job. You can have only one person get the job, and
right.
The pyramid is very narrow at the top.
So when things like the VP position or the science and technology officer position came available, were those positions that were offered to you, or were those positions that you had to apply for?
No, offered.
Okay.
Yeah, no, in this company, you don't apply for those positions, unfortunately. That's not an open process.
I didn't think so.
No.
But
I think people would like it to be an open process, but it isn't that way. No. Just the stars got aligned, I guess.
Yeah.
I did a very good job in Duet. I came in here and did a very nice job with the services organization. So maybe that's, you know, also it depends on right time, right place.
Yeah. Well, and it certainly sounded like when you were working with chemical intermediates that you did a very good job. It just
was difficult.
It was a very difficult situation.
Very difficult situation. So after that, I wasn't asked to do another business assignment, and I was perfectly happy about that decision. Because, you know, there's some things you really kind of gravitate to and have an affinity for. Others, you have to force yourself to want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make sense, you know, if you don't enjoy it as much. I made my aspiration pretty clear to the people that make such decisions that I really wanted to be in technology management. They weren't used to hearing that because, you know, people regard business management as the desirable career in DuPont.
Interesting.
But I really feel this company is founded on innovation, will grow through innovation. Innovation is the lifeblood of this company. And being responsible for that is an amazing honor. And I aspired to that at later stages in my life.
Well, now you mentioned that now that you are emeritus, you get to go and do things. You give a lot of talks.
Yeah.
You're on various advisory committees.
Yeah.
Do you have more time for some things like hobbies?
Yeah, like travel,
mm-hmm.
Yes, like reading, like doing some cooking from time to time. And, you know, I just haven't had the time to read books.
Yeah.
And, you know, once I get through the phase in which I have to do a lot of clearing up, because, you know, you collect stuff over
mm-hmm.
30 years of a DuPont career that, unless you're an amazing organizer and have the will to throw stuff away each year, I didn't. So I have a lot of stuff to clear, and as I clear all that paperwork and manage all these external assignments, it still doesn't leave a lot of time.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to get physically fit, so I joined a gym and I go to a trainer, and I'm trying to get to eat right and do all the things that I aspired to do, which I didn't do.
Well, now you have a little bit more time.
I have a little bit more time. So I'm really soul searching on exactly what will I focus on. Because right now, there's many exciting things to do, and I get invited all over the place. But that won't be forever.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to pick a cause or a passion and then stay after it, stay with it, get deep in it. Because as you grow up in management and go further, you have a little knowledge of a lot of things, but you don't go deep into one subject or another. So I have to decide what that is that I want to focus on. But there's many things I want to learn. And so I've bought a lot of tapes that I will one day start to absorb in biology, for instance, languages, for another instance. There's lots of learning I need to do. But yeah, there's plenty of time to do the hobbies that I didn't cultivate through my career and now wish I had.
You said you get to do some traveling now.
Yeah, we went away to Europe for several weeks, and then we go to India for 4 weeks. So plenty of travel for a while. So yes, we will travel for 6 weeks a year. We didn't take our 6 weeks of vacation through my career, and so I would bank it.
Okay.
So then you can cash it in and when you retire.
Right.
But we never had the time to go off on so much vacation. So wish we could live our lives the other way around. You know, when you have the money and can go on vacation, you don't have the time to do it. And when you're young, you don't have the money.
No.
And you have the time, but it's just become so expensive. And with the dollar the way it is, Europe is extremely expensive.
Yes.
But there's so much to see in this country we haven't seen, and so many friends to see across this country as well as other countries, that there's enough to fill a lifetime, actually.
Now,
it's
when you
exciting to look forward to.
When you and your husband go back to India,
yeah.
Is his family also in the Mumbai area?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we have a wedding in the family, you know, so his sister's children are marriageable and age, and my brother's grandchildren, schooling age. And so there's so much mentoring we do internally,
mm-hmm.
in the family. It's great fun.
Great. Sounds very exciting.
Yeah. Do you have children yourself?
Not yet.
Not yet.
In October.
October.
Hopefully
exciting.
October.
Exciting.
Yes.
Exciting.
Was there ever a time in your career where you guys considered going back to India?
No, because we didn't see the opportunity in our day. But today's youth wants to go back because
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of opportunity. So times have changed, and we didn't dream that this day would come for India.
Yeah.
It has been remarkable how things have changed. No, when we came abroad, it just wasn't feasible for us to get the kinds of opportunities we were seeking, first in research and then in industry, because Indian industry didn't invest in R&D at all, and still doesn't. They copy mostly what the products that the U.S. makes. There will come a time when industry starts to invest in R&D, but not yet. The people who want to go back are people in general who are either joining a multinational, or there are sectors that are more mature with Indian industry, like agriculture, like banking, financial services, computing services, things like that, where the opportunities are manifold. But not for the kinds of research we were doing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have gone to Europe either, actually. I felt like there's no other country where I want to go.
Well, I think we've come to the end of the questions
that I wanted
to make sure
good.
I covered.
I hope you get a few excerpts that you can use.
I'm sure that I will. Is there anything that I didn't ask about that I should have, or anything else that you want to mention?
No, I think, you know, the quote from Churchill, which says, you know, you must never give up.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen that one.
Uh-huh.
I used to have a big poster with that on my wall, and I really liked it. There were many times when I felt, I can't do this. I'm not sure I can do this. And then I'd look up and it would inspire me, give me hope, and just muster the will to go forth and do it.
Yes.
Because there are times when you figure, gee, this is not a solvable problem. I'm not sure I can handle this, you know. But somewhere, somehow, the light comes through the tunnel.
You have to muster the confidence
from somewhere. Exactly. And then help the next generation. That's the most fun now, watching the next generation grow. That's really been, both for my husband and for myself, we really enjoy the mentoring of young people now,
mm-hmm.
which we do a lot of, actually. He likes to do that for young entrepreneurs, and I like to do it for young women.
Well, that's great. I think that sounds like a wonderful place to stop, unless
yes.
there's anything else at all you want to say?
No, not at all.
Great. Well, thank you so much for all of your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.